All right. Hi, everybody. So it's been a really great panel of talks. I think of my talk as sort of, there's all this amazing technology. How do we implement it? How can we use it? Essentially as fast as possible and scaling as much as possible. So I think a lot of us here probably have streamlined data processing pipelines, but I feel like in general, the field suffers from a problem of from your amazing microscope into your amazing structure, there's essentially a lot of sort of confusing steps, different locations of data processing, things that are sort of not optimal. And we all suffer through it because it works and our structure is important, but I think there's a big gap here as for how you scale this up. And everybody has a homebrewed solution, and that's great, but is there other ways that we could do this? How can we change this? And sort of related to that is we're getting more and more users. Expert level of knowledge is going down, but it does feel like cyber infrastructure is also going down because you all have some clusters and everybody's coming to use your cluster now because you want to do cryo-EM, and how do you scale that? And everyone has a different solution, but I'll tell you about one, which is the cloud. So just to think about it, I want you to think about how do you scale computing and storage? And I think the and storage part is sort of going to be part of the trick here. So you can imagine that you could get really big capital investments from a university, country, whatever you want, to fund microscopes and IT support. And that works. If it works, that's great. But you can maybe have university-wide initiatives, but this costs a lot of money, and so does probably having university-wide initiatives, because universities are now running themselves more like businesses. There are sometimes places, like in the US, there are national supercomputers that are free, but there's no storage. And so what else, is there a different way to approach this? And the way that I'll talk about is using the cloud, which the idea is that the upfront cost is low, and that it's extremely scalable, and the data storage sort of is competitive or comparable to local storage. So the cloud is what we all use every day, right now, on everybody's laptops, everybody's in the cloud. And so the question is, what can we do for cryo-EM? And so right now, people use it for website hosting, data storage, but also just computing. And so we all are up here at the top, you know, you're watching your Netflix, or you're putting files in Dropbox, but if we could just tap straight into the resources that run the cloud, can we do cryo-EM there? And so that's where we're going to step in. So I'm going to talk today about Amazon Web Services, the world's largest cloud computing provider, and that we'll just use their virtual machines. So the reasons that you should consider cloud computing is that, in general, the way it works out is you pay as you go, and it's prorated to the minute. And so that means you want to run a really fancy machine. It's now just priced per minute, which is different than upfront costs. And this all gets in sort of budgets and things, but it's nice, though, that the bar is very low to get into it. The data storage is very reliable. I think this is a number that we don't think hard about in cryo-EM. I think a lot of people have really, you know, not secure data storage probably. You have hard drives kicking around. On the cloud, they can measure the data durability, and they have a good number, and it's very durable. The question is whether you want that. It's a different question, but it's very durable storage. And the nice other thing is that it's globally available and that it's all over the world. And so if you can put your software on the cloud, you can now get people using it everywhere. And that's nice as sort of releasing it on a platform. So Amazon Web Services is the company that provides you books, computers, monitors, and bookshelves, but also the world's largest cloud computing provider. And so the idea is that they have data centers all over the world, and a data center is a circle, and inside of that they have different buildings that they've sort of different regions or different areas inside of them called zones, and that these are sort of spreading. And in green are all the ones that are going to be coming up, and so they're just continually growing. And it's like you would imagine, more and more computers, more and more resources, and everything keeps getting cheaper. And so I'm essentially using ones in the United States, but these are all over the world. I thought I'd give you sort of an overview of what's available to give you a sense that you can kind of do anything you want computationally. And so if you were to sort of plot this versus sort of GPU RAM versus number of CPU, GPU, or sort of processing power. At the extremes, you have essentially a half of a CPU over here. These are extremely cheap and sort of no memory. At the other end, the biggest machine, or one of the biggest machines, is a 128 CPU. And so I just want to point out here, these are called vCPUs. We can call them CPUs or cores, but for the people who care, they're hyperthreads on a core. So they have 128 of these CPUs and then 2 terabytes of RAM. So that's the extreme. There are sort of now along this plot, there are going to be different types of machines. So there's sort of ones that are more CPU, some that have more memory, and then in there are now a bunch of GPUs. So they have 1, 8, or 16 GPUs, and these are K80 GPUs, but they have a lot of RAM as well. They also have single precision GPUs, and that of here there are 48 more that I'm not showing. And so they have every flavor. So you have a type of job, they have it available. On this, you can now map prices. So I told you pay per hour, and it's prorated to the minute. And so what that means is that per hour, the fanciest one is going to be around $13 an hour. And I'll talk about how you reserve them in a second. But these are sort of the prices that you get. And they sort of pan out in that these are, you know, extremely cheap and to different expenses. All right, so when it comes to actually getting these, there's a few choices. And I just want to lay out the terms just so we're all clear. There's a standard way to use it. They call it on-demand. But the idea is you reserve it, and it's yours, and you're paying sort of a standard rate. Another way that you could reserve it is you could just be upfront and say, like, I'm going to buy a computer for 3 years. And that, in that case, you think of it as just buying a computer, and Amazon's hosting it for you. And it's cheaper because you're upfront paying for it, and this can be, like, half the cost. And the cheapest way is a way that they call spot prices, and there's a market for sort of unused machines. And this is extremely cheap compared to the on-demand. But so for anyone who remembered, we originally used the cloud and used spot prices, and people like really pushed back on it. They thought it was going to be kind of unstable. And so now I'm going to tell you all the stuff I'm showing you today is using just the on-demand. So this is like you're never going to get kicked off. All the prices are sort of the full sticker price for price, but there's no uncertainty anymore. So, but just think of it in the way that every price I'm telling you is sort of the most you could pay. Everything else could be cheaper. Okay, just so we're on the same page with storage, I'll talk about one of these a little bit. So on some of the machines, they have local SSDs, so you can just write straight to the machine. It's not stored, but that's just on the machine. There's storage. There are SSDs that are sort of can be attached and detached to machines. You can think of that as a storage. There's a price per gigabyte per month that you pay. And then at the bottom here are sort of, so this is a file system. This can be on your machine. You interact with it, you know, from a terminal. There's other storage here that scales essentially infinitely. This is called object-based storage, and that the one that you use here is called simple storage service, and this is, you know, a number of, you know, 2 cents per gigabyte per year, and that this is sort of where you can put your data and just access it and move it back and forth really quickly. And then related to that is the cold data storage called Glacier. But I'm mentioning this because I'm going to be using this for moving data in and out of Amazon. Okay, so originally we did this. We thought this was a neat system. It felt like a good first step for us. But anyone who tried to use it realized it was cumbersome, it was manual, you had to sort of be a medium to expert level Linux programmer. And so how can we actually make this better? And in thinking about it, I realized that the way we all want to use the cloud is that you want someone else to take care of all the back end. And so, you know, Dropbox, Google Drive, they're handling the back end. You just want to be on your computer and just working with it. And so that's the framework that I've now adopted for doing all of the CryoEM work that I'm doing. So the idea is really simple, and you're on your laptop, and you'd like to execute a command, and then someone or something runs the code for you and brings it back. That would be the nice way to do it. And so this is what I'm going to tell you about is software I wrote that is this interface so that users don't have to interact with Amazon, because no one really wants to do that. And so as a prototype, I sort of went into the Relyon sort of user interface to figure out how to plug this in. And it was actually really simple because it's already built to submit to a cluster. And so the idea is you just change the cluster submission command to instead go to a cluster or whatever. It now just pushes it to my code, and then my code catches it and moves it up to Amazon. And so the idea is I wrote that, and then I took every step in the pipeline to plug it into my software so that you want to do anything, it can catch it and put it up to Amazon. And so the basic model is that you on your laptop are going to say run now, and it's going to execute a command that I'm calling qsubaws, and that then it's going to move your data. And just the point out is that it's all going to go up to S3, which is fast upload because it can catch data really quickly, and it's also a cheap sort of stable storage place, sort of a halfway location. And then once it gets onto a machine, it will then attach it to maybe these sort of SSDs and things, and then in real time it'll just sync it back to your computer. And so the idea is a user hits go, and then your run.out file just gets updated locally, and you don't notice that it's actually running on Amazon. All the files are being populated in real time. So to walk you through how this works, the idea is you sit down at your laptop or hopefully a place with a good network connection. So it's worth pointing out, if you're moving movies up to Amazon, you should have good networking. Don't do it over Wi-Fi. But other things, like if you're uploading, you know, volumes and smaller things, it's not as bad. But, you know, networking is important. Okay, the idea is you sit down, you open the Relyon GUI, you say run. My code moves it up to Amazon to these S3 buckets. If you have good networking, like at Michigan and UCSD, that means you're getting about a terabyte an hour. So that's not bad, but it still takes time. You upload it there. Once it's up there, my code starts handling it for you. So you want to run Unblur. We're not running the fancy new version of Unblur, unfortunately, so it takes a little bit longer. But you can be like, oh, you want to run Unblur on 1,500 movies? Oh, I can just spin up 5 times 128 machines and just run it there, and it'll handle it for you. In this case, it'll download the micrographs for you, and then it will just keep the movies in the cloud. And just to point out, all these colors are actually sort of the official colors that Amazon uses. So there's all of these. So the in red here is a circle for security group, and the idea is that that security group, so my code is sort of helping to make everything secure, where you know only your IP address can access this and all these different things. And so besides just being able to use Amazon, using the software gets you access to sort of some knowledge of how to use the system. And that on top of that, on these machines, you sort of installed all the enhanced networking architectures you need to move data. Okay, so after that, so with that, not as impressive compared to what Nico just showed, but essentially I could do, with 1,500 movies, you can align all of them in 2 hours because you're using as many CPUs as you want. So after that, you can now just do every step you want. So you can do particle extraction on whatever machine. Don't need that many. Again, this is all in Reliant. You do this. Again, everything's going back to the user locally, and so you can look at the particle stack on your laptop just with the normal GUI. You go through and you'll do all the GPU accelerated steps. So these are using machines that have one to 16 different GPUs, and you know you can the user can override it, but my code will also just by default kind of approximate what you should use, and it will you know, do everything you need on GPUs. And then for all the sort of other steps that involve movie processing, these are all CPU intensive steps. And then in this case, you can spin up these again big machines here or these huge machines on the left here. Just to point out, per instance, they can hold 42 terabytes, and so you can sort of download all the data, extract your movies, and so on. So the idea is this is the software that I wrote, and so users don't have to handle this, but my software is sort of moving things and doing things optimally for you. So how does this perform? How does this work? So again, taking the data from a workstation, which is extremely impressive that a workstation is even you know competitive with the cloud, did all of the same steps for the 2.2 angstrom Betagel data set, and we did it in half the time. So it's not like we're going crazy fast, but we're sort of saving a lot of time as far as this goes. And it's worth pointing out, all this time is sort of the net time. This is with data upload. So like you're running Unblur, 12 hours of that was uploading, but then you know a couple hours were just running it. So there was some steps where there is uploading. But that said, that's still faster than running on a single workstation. It's an unfair comparison in some ways. It's sort of saying the world's largest supercomputer versus one workstation, but it's still a benchmark for us to think about. And so you can look at it and say, well, where did the speed up come from? And honestly, the GPU speed ups weren't different because of the way the GPUs are set up. It's mostly all the CPU stuff because I could just you know, get as many CPUs as I needed. And so that's sort of where the biggest improvements came. So the biggest things here were sort of you know, threefold more for these different movie steps. You can look at the cost breakdown sort of per step. And again, it turns out the CPUs are also sort of where all the cost is being driven. And so to summarize So these are the costs. It's worth pointing out these GPU steps are all using a previous generation that are more expensive. These are all now half the cost probably just in the course of this project. They all have gone down. And you can imagine that new software things are going to be even faster, so this will keep going down. So I think you know things just kind of keep going down in price. Overall cost, the sticker price of this was you know near $700, which I think most people would be like, that's a lot of money. I can't believe you'll spend a $700 per structure. And so to try and compare this, I want to put this in context, right? So you're like, that's a lot of money. But okay, how do we capture that in sort of a number that makes sense? So let's say you took a local GPU workstation, the one that Schwarz used in his paper. Let's say it was cost $10,000 and you used it only during work days, like working hours. It would cost you $72 just for the computing time over 3 years. So this is a big difference in price. But there's a difference in processing time here that's really significant. And so it's twice as fast. And if you were to sort of write down and say, like, you can only submit jobs during working hours, how many days would it take you? It would take you 10 days to do the way Shores did it. And for me, it would be 5 days. And so you now saved essentially a work week of time doing it on the cloud. And so the question is that worth it for you? Is that worth the money that you save? And so you save, essentially, you know, money. And so the way you could work that out is that let's assume someone gets paid this much money per year, $50,000, their daily salary is this. So it would have cost you this much money to run locally because you are now taking longer. People will probably hate this comparison, but I'm trying to put context and put numbers into how we think about computing. And so the point and the punchline is that you probably also won't like this, but let's imagine that you want to do three structures at the same time. You have one workstation, you do them sequentially. On the cloud, it doesn't change anything. It's the same amount of time because you just can keep scaling. And so I think that's where it all comes in, which is that per user, you know, it's probably a toss-up. But when you do more than one, multiple structures, this is where big impacts could come in, and you'll sort of see that, yeah, it's going to take you like a month instead of 5 days, and that's a cost. Whether or not the cost is important to you is up to you. All right, so this is where the software is living because we're sort of tracking with the GPUs, but the nice thing here is that I can install the software and then just distribute it. And then you can log in Australia or in Europe or wherever and just use the same software. And that's really nice. So besides that, to me, the framework is now built, right? So I have this code that can just move data. So what else can we do with it? So one is that we thought, well, Rosetta is a really powerful software package, a big headache to use for people who haven't used it. And so we thought, well, let's just put this in the cloud and just see if we can just run it there instead of locally. And so very powerful software for modeling. The idea is much simpler than the Reliant whole workflow, but the idea is that we wrote essentially Python code that moves your data up and formats it for Rosetta and runs it across multiple machines. And the performance is great, which isn't surprising, but you know this is scalable, sort of perfectly scalable. The idea is a local 16-core workstation would have taken 60 hours. For us, it took 4. And that this is not that expensive, $40 to be done. And probably the bigger point here is that we actually just use Rosetta in all the steps for you, so you just provide a PDB file and a FASTA file and an EM map. We go from there. So that's kind of nice. So it helps sort of hints at how you can use this to distribute software, protocols, pipelines in a way that's different than other people. So what else can you do? So we are now, so with Bridget and Clint and NRAM, we've put this into the back end of the Appian website that's locally hosted here. But the idea is they have 200 users. How do you give them computing? One idea is take the powerful Appian platform and put it back there. Again, really not that much work once I have this sort of software package. And so the idea is now users are in Appian, and on this, you're going to select your instance, and you just hit go, and then everything just runs off in the cloud for you. So I think it's a very powerful approach. And so I think this framework is, I think, a really important framework, that in some ways it sort of makes sense, and I think it's obvious, but it took me a while to realize that if you want to use data in the cloud, it should all just be handled locally, and users don't have to handle what's going on up there. And so with this framework and with the code I've written, it's really easy now. Take any software package you want, and you can just put it on the cloud. And I think it's worth pointing out that Nico's system program would run on a machine that is $3 an hour or $4 an hour. And so that's so fast that that's actually affordable. And so I think there are lots of ways to solve this problem of computing, but this is definitely one way. And I think it's going to be around and useful for us. And then, as Nico was sort of alluding to, bigger data sets, bigger things, this sort of lets you just scale as big as you want. You want to do something, this is not a problem. The question is sort of if it's going to be helpful for you. But that's sort of my framework. I think it's an amazing resource that we should all be using. And so the questions that I had that were also questions that I submitted to Bridget and Clint, so sort of easy to answer. But is the cloud useful? The answer is yes, because it's just giant way to outsource your IT administration. There's a ton of computing configurations, and you could actually just do your full-on processing there and just do all of your data storage and different things. The question is sort of how do you budget for it and how do you use it in that way, and that which is a practical and important consideration, but this is sort of saying it's all there, it's whether or not you want to use it. Type of resources that are there, you can have anything you want. You pick the type of problem, so if you're using a certain program that's memory intensive, it's there. If it's just CPU intensive, that's fine, whatever you want. Appropriate workflows and benchmarks. I'm benchmarking everything, and essentially, just because of the GPUs, we're not terribly faster than 4 1080s for Reliant, but we're competitive, maybe slightly faster, depending. But that is going to keep changing because they've released 3 GPU machines in the last year and a half, so 3 different types of architectures. And last week was a new one that's twice as fast as any other one for machine learning. And so it's sort of there's this constant updating and improvement of the software. The cost is, there is a cost, but the question is, how do you put that in the context? I would encourage everybody to really calculate per gigabyte per month your storage to figure out what that means, which is hard. But it would be how much are you paying IT staff or not? Some universities would be you can use our centralized storage, $200 per terabyte per year. This isn't bad. It's, a penny per gigabyte per month, but that's not that different than putting on Amazon. And so you have to really think about where your costs are. And maybe it's being subsidized by a university, and then you probably wouldn't use this. But these are just sort of, it's a good benchmark. It's also a good negotiating point, too. If your university is trying to overcharge you, you can be why don't I just go to Amazon? And that could be, just even that leverage could be useful for you. So when should you use a cloud? I honestly feel in my mind, especially for experts in the room, all of us here already have computing. But then there are probably times when your cluster is full or your machine is down, but you have a grant due or a paper due. And this is sort of the burstable side of your computing. You want to solve 5 structures in a day, not in the course of 3 days, but this afternoon. You could do it this way. And so I viewed it as sort of a burstable way or a place to push data whenever you really need it done. And so it's worth pointing out these new GPU machines that are 4, single precision GPUs are $4, $4.50 an hour to run, which is way cheaper than an hourly rate. So I think that's sort of the context to think about, is if you wait 2 days to run a job or a day to run a job, you sort of lost that money already. But the biggest, I think the best use case here are facilities and large facilities. And the idea is many users are going to come to a facility and they're like, I don't have computing, I'm a biochemist, I maybe have one Linux machine, I don't have the infrastructure, can I just process it at the facility? And this is a way that a facility could just have the software and just deploy it for them and manage it for them. I think that's definitely one thing to do. So to me, those are the take-home points. We're sort of, I put it into now a new package, a new way of using it, and I'm also going to be demoing it tomorrow afternoon just so people can see what it looks like, and I'll just be running jobs from my laptop in this room, so it'll be really easy. So thanks.
Questions for Michael?
So, David, do you ever run out of compute machines in the cloud? I mean, do you ever ask for one and it's just not there?
So there was a time, so I think like, I forget when that was, like 6 months ago, this like type of GPU machine, I think they were like taking part of the data centers down and updating it, but there was like a few weeks where like you'd ask for one and it didn't come back. That problem's gone now, but it happened. And I'm not sure it was too much demand, but they would tell you like, oh, this data center is full, try this one. But that it happened once, but that was a sort of a, it felt like something was changing, but now it's fine again. But it's a good point. So far, it seems like the answer is just you can keep asking for more and it's okay.
Could we get some people with blue badges to bring in 8 chairs, please? And then Scott's got a question.
Okay. All right, so you kept saying my code. So does this mean that that you have like a standard way of processing like that? Let me phrase the question like this. So, you know, often when you're doing some refinement, you play. You want to change a parameter, run it again. Mm-hmm. Is that possible so what is your code doing?
Right. So I guess like I'm saying my code is that all the managing of Amazon resources is my code. But like you want to tweak I'm not changing refinement parameters. I'm not changing refinement parameters or anything. Essentially the idea is that you determine that I'll help you pick the machine, but you can also override that. So the idea is that I'm trying to be like, you say go, like all the GPU, CPU parameters are usually overwritten. Because like I already know the best way to run it. So that's overwritten. But the anything else when it comes to the, I don't know, I'm not touching that for sure. Yeah.
But that example, if you run multiple 3D refinements, do you each time have to re-upload the particles or can they be stored in the cloud and stay there?
So yeah, it's a great question. I do cache the data, and that's the idea of this like S3 intermediate. There's this intermediate bucket. And the idea is your data are uploaded there, and actually, like your sort of hidden files, there's a hidden file I write out that's going to be like this, you know, this job name is located on this S3 bucket. And so I sort of can do that. Users can delete it, but the idea is that for the movie processing, the movies went up once, and then the whole thing is held there and locally.
How long will it be held there?
As long as essentially you set up now a cron job on your computer or something. There's a layer for the user to delete it later. So unfortunately, you can't say like delete this bucket in a day. You have to write the code that says go delete this in a day. So unfortunately.
And you mentioned that you were going to implement CryoSpark and mm-hmm. other software. So obviously the field is changing very rapidly. So how will you keep up with 20 different software that are revolutionizing our data processing?
Right. I mean, honestly, yeah, you're right. It's me right now maintaining it. But the idea is that you would try and have at least a couple people helping me maintain it. For instance, CryoSpark's on there. I can't distribute it, obviously. They have a licensing thing. But we'll have the instructions on there to sort of do it, download it, and could have it running. And that wouldn't be a problem. But you're right. It's, how do you keep up? And that's part of what I have to figure out next.